All right, we're starting here on Lamed Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Mishnah says, Erev Tisha B'Av, lo yuchal adam bet tavshilin. An Erev Tisha B'Av, one should not eat two cooked items together. Amar Rav Yehuda, now we have an Amoraic qualification of that statement in the Mishnah, which is, lo shanu ela mishesh sha'ot ulamalo. That's only true if it's in the afternoon. Aval mishesh sha'ot ulamato, if it's in the morning, mutar, then it's completely mutar. Vamar of Yehuda, and we have an additional qualification over here, which is Lo Shanu Ela B'Suda Mafsikba, only if it's the final Suda of the day. Ava Suda She'enu Mafsikba Mutar, but if it's not the Suda Mafsekit, even in the afternoon, then it's Mutar. V'tarvayu Dukula, we're mitzarif both of these qualifications in order to end up the Kula, which means that in order for this to be restricted, it'll both have to be in the afternoon, and it'll have to be the final meal that you have before the fast. That's the meal, it's called the Suda Mafsekit, and that's the meal in which there's this restriction against having Shnei Tavshilin. Pitzricha, and we need both these statements. Tiyashminu b'Suda Mafsikba, if you just told me that this restriction applies by the final meal of the day, havaminu afilu mishesha otu lamato, I would have thought even in the morning, that was the final meal, that would be restricted. Kamash malon, mishesha otu lamalo, it's only in the afternoon that counts. Viyashminu mishesha otu lamalo, if you only told me about the din, that it's only in the afternoon, if he has two sudot in the afternoon, I would think that the restriction would apply to both of them. That it only applies in the suda in which he's mafsik the fast. And that's the only one where you have this restriction of having two tavshilim. Over here, Tosafot explains that the restriction against two tavshilim is, number one, Rizonol Mar B'Shtik Deirot, something that's cooked in two separate entities or pots. That's number one. In addition to that, items that are normally eaten together, something that's not normally eaten alone, but always has a gravy or another item placed with it, that's not considered to be two tavshilim, that's considered to be one tavshil. And items that are eaten raw, and you don't need to cook them, then if you do cook them, they're not considered to be an additional tavshil. So for instance, cheese or milk, items that you could drink raw, or you can eat in their raw state, or tapuchim, or apples, all of those items, if you cook them, they're not considered to be an additional tavshil because they're nechal kamoshu chai. They're eaten in a raw state, and therefore when you cook them, they're not considered to be a tavshil or additional tavshil. He also gives the example of onions that are not eaten alone, and so therefore when you have something that accompanies the onion in order to make it edible, that's also not considered to be shnei tavshilim. All right, now we have two braitot. Tanyo kalishna kamo, tanyo kalishna batro. We have a braita that supports the first lashon, and we have a braita that supports the second lashon, meaning the first qualification of Rav Yehuda and the second qualification of Rav Yehuda. Tanya Kalishna Batru, we have a braita that supports the second qualification, Soed Erev Tisha B'Av. Person who has a meal on Erev Tisha B'Av, Imatid Lisod Suda Acheret, if he intends to eat another meal after this one, Mutar Lechol Basar Lishtot Yayin. He can eat meat and drink wine. Vim Lav, if this he plans to be his last meal, Asur Lechol Basar Lishtot Yayin. Then he can't eat meat and drink wine in the Suda, because that is the Suda HaMafseket. Tanya Kalishna Kamo, we have a braita that supports the first qualification of Yehuda, which is Erev Tisha B'Av, Lo Yochal Adam Shnei Tavshilim, Lo Yochal Basar, V'lo Yishte Yayin. So those are the restrictions in the Suda HaMafseket. You can't have two cooked items, you can't have basar, you can't have meat, V'lo Yishte Yayin, you can't have wine. Shimon Ben Gamliel Omer Yishaneh, he has to change what his normal practice is. Sam Rav Yehuda Ketzem Yishaneh. How do you change that? Ima yeragil le'achol shnei tavshilim yochol min echad. If you normally eat two cooked items, you should eat only one. Ima yeragil le'sod basara b'nei adam. If you normally eat with a company of 10 people, suay b'chamisha, you should only eat with 5 people. Ima yeragil le'shtot tasara kosot. If you normally drinks 10 cups of wine, shoteh chamisha kosot, you should only drink 5 cups of wine. But med v'im mamurim mishay sha'ot ulamalo, that's only true in the afternoon. Avel mishay sha'ot ulamata mutar. But in the morning time, it is totally mutar. So here you have each one of those braita that supports one of the qualifications stated by Rav Yehuda. The second braita that we just brought supports this contention that it only applies in the afternoon, not in the morning. And the first braita that we brought supports the idea that it's only in the Suda Mafseket, not in the Suda that you plan to have another Suda afterwards. Tanya Idach, Erev Tisha B'Av, Lo Yochal Adam Shnei Tavshilim, Lo Yochal Basar V'Lo Yishtei Yayin Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says, on Erev Tisha B'Av, a person can't have two tavshilim, can't have basar, can't have yayin. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Chamim amim yishaneh. He should change from his normal practice. Umimayit b'basar b'yayin. And he reduces the amount of meat and wine he consumes. Ketzad mimayit. How does he do that? If you normally ate a litra, which is a measurement of basar, then he should only have a half. If he normally drinks that amount of wine, if he didn't normally have basar v'yayin in his meals, then asur. If he normally has radishes or salted fish or meat after his meal, arishut biyado, you can do that. Tanya yidach, we have one more breita. Kol shu mishum tisha ba'av, esor lechol basar v'asor leshtot yayin. Any meal that is for tisha b'av, you can't have meat and wine in it. V'asor lechotz, and you can't bathe. Kol she'enu mishum tisha b'av, the meal that's not for tisha b'av, mutar lechol basar leshtot yayin. You can eat meat and you can drink wine. V'asor lechotz. And you cannot still wash yourself or bathe yourself. If you can eat, you can wash. So here, this final braita, first of all, explains anything that's related to the meal of Tisha B'Av. The meal of Tisha B'Av is the Suda Mafseket. So the restriction against Basar V'Yayin is only in the Suda Mafseket, not before that point in time. That's number one. Number two is the Chameshit Ha'inuyim that come with Tisha B'Av. The Chameshit Ha'inuyim are connected. If you can eat, that's what Rabbi Yishmael ben Rabbi Yossi says, then you can bathe yourself because they're all connected. Now, it is a fast that starts at the nighttime, and therefore we stop by Ben Hashmashot. There is a sheet of the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot who thinks that you have to be Mosifim Michol al HaKodesh with regards to Tisha B'Av. There's no Kodesh. So it means that you have to be Mosif the Tanit. You have to extend the Tanit onto Chol. But generally our practice is to stop before Shkia from eating and from all of the other Chameshet Ayinuim that are associated with Tisha B'Av, but not particularly to create a Hosafa of sorts. By Yom Kippurim, we're much more makpid about that. But here by Tisha B'Av, because since it's only a Dayat Yachid of the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayot, it's not even a Mishnah Torah, we generally are not makpid about being Mosif Michol al HaKodesh or being Mosif the Tanit to before Shkia. Now, as far as what you just saw in the Gemara, there are two things to focus on. Number one is, as far as the restrictions of Basar V'Yayin, and the restriction of Shnei Tav Shalim, they only apply during the Suda Mafseket. So Medina de Gemara, the only time that Basar V'Yayin are Asurim is in Suda Mafseket. That means not even on Erev Tisha B'Av, just in the Suda Mafseket. The Rishonim extended that it wasn't just on the Suda Mafseket, but even on Erev Tisha B'Av, which is the practice, I think, of many of the Teimanim. The Sfaradim al-Shulchan Aruch quotes it with regards to Shvua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, to have this restriction. And then there are others, like the Ashkenazim, who extend it all the way back to Rosh Chodesh, that we are makpid not to have Basar V'Yayin during that period of time. Now, the reason we don't have Basar V'Yayin is twofold. One aspect is the idea that Ein Simcha Lo Basar V'Yayin. So there's the aspect of Simcha, and that this is a time period when there shouldn't be Simcha. That's one aspect of it. Although we know that by avelut, a regular avelut, a person is allowed to eat basar v'yayin. So that can't be the complete explanation here, because avelut does not preclude basar v'yayin. In addition, the reason that we don't consume basar v'yayin is because of zecher to the korbanot in the Mikdash. The basar of the basar korbanot and the yayin of the nisachim. So zecher to the fact that we don't have the Mikdash anymore, zecher the korban, we don't consume basar v'yayin because we are pained by the fact that we have lost those items from the Mikdash. It's Gemara in Baba Batra, and talking about the issues of Zecher Churban, talks about how the people after the Churban Abayit didn't want to eat meat at all and didn't want to drink wine at all. They wanted to abstain from all these items because of the loss of the Churban. And over there, the Tanaim explained to them that you can't do this. That's impossible. You're making something that's so chamur and so difficult that people aren't going to be able to uphold this. So we have to designate or delineate certain periods of time in which we have Zecher the Churban, but it can't be a state of being or a state of existence all year round. And so the question is, how far do we extend this restriction of Basar V'Yayin? Do we do it on just Suda Mafseket? Is it also on Erev Tisha B'Av, Shavua Shechal Bo, or from Rosh Chodesh? And again, the practice of the Ashkenazim is from Rosh Chodesh itself to restrict those items. Now, the second thing to focus on here is the Suda Mafseket. The Mishnah Berurah raises this issue, which is a very difficult issue. The Suda Mafseket is supposed to be the final meal before Tisha B'Av. What ends up happening today is that everybody has this big meal before they go into Tisha B'Av, because they're about to go into a fast day. So they have this big meal. And then afterwards, they have like this Suda Mafseket afterwards, which turns out either to be Achilat Arai or Achilat Gasa. I mean, the person's already full, and then they're trying to have the Suda Mafseket afterwards. Or the person has eaten a full meal and it's like kind of a little snack afterwards. It's not really the meal. It's not really the Suda Mafseket. So it turns out that we create a situation in which the Suda Mafseket almost turns into a farce because we're doing it after we just had a very large meal. It presents a number of halachic issues. One of them is bracha shein tzricha, which is that if you're going to bench for the meal before and then wash again and then eat another meal, it was something that was not necessary. You could have continued straight through and you didn't have to wash, but you can't do that because if you make this your Suda Mafseket, then you can't eat all the food you ate in the meal. So the suggestion of the Mishnah Berurah is to actually bench, to stop the meal that you have, the meal for Tisha B'Av, the one that you have a big meal, then go to Mincha, daven Mincha, then come back and have your Suda Mafseket after Mincha. So that way there really is a hefsek between them, and therefore you don't have a bracha shein tzricha. In addition, then when you come back, you should remain hungry, meaning that you shouldn't eat your full fill in the meal before Mincha. You should leave room afterwards in order that you can have the Suda Mafseket when it's still meaningful to eat something, in order to have the Suda Mafseket at a time period when you're still hungry, number one. And number two is to separate it from the previous meal. Now, we saw that from the Gemara, that's fine, that you have a meal before the Suda Mafseket, because only the final meal that matters. But it has to be done in a way that the Suda Mafseket is somehow separated from the meal that you had before, because otherwise that whole meal becomes one big meal, and that's problematic. So the Mishnah Berurah writes in, a chamina birosho, person has to look and understand what they're doing, how they're eating, and what the consequences of what they're doing are, and that they should do it this way. The Eli Rabbo is matzdik et ar minhag, and says that we are too weak to fast by simply having a Suda Mafseket that involves just pat chayriva and some water and some ashes. That wouldn't be sufficient for us. Because of that weakness, we need to eat more in order to survive the fast. Therefore, we're doing it l'shem shemayim. We're eating that big meal so that we can fast the next day. But then we have to deal with the other issue is then how do you have a Suda Mafseket? So again, it's important to create a hefsek between the two meals. It's also important so that a person still has room to eat, that they feel the Suda Mafseket is really a Suda and not some sort of achilat arai or achilat gasa. It developed over time. It's a later development in the time of the Rishonim. It's clearly a minhag. And this does have nafkaminot alocha in terms of the fact that it's moved back to Tisha B'Av. You have to separate things that are de Medina de Gemara and things that are Medina de Minhag. For instance, Rav Moshe in the Igros Moshe talks about cutting one's hair or shaving or kibus or cleaning one's clothing. That with regards to the Gemara, it seems to be that those are only restricted during Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. So in Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, that's an Isser Medina de Gemara. Before that point in time, it's only a Minhag. Therefore, if one is in a position where they're going to suffer financial loss or for work they need to do it, then when it comes to a minhag, one can override in that case. So a person can shave or a person can clean their clothing if it's for the purposes of work, if it's for the purposes of preventing financial loss. That's only true when it's a minhag, not when it's Medina de Gemara. So when you have Medina de Gemara, when it's Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, then it's much more difficult. And there, it's very hard to come by dispensations, both for shaving and for kibbutz, even for work, even for financial loss, because that's something that's Medina de Gemara. The same thing applies here with terms of basar v'yayin, in terms of the kulot that people are noheg. The kulot by basar v'yayin, in order for instance, to have, a sudat mitzvah, in which they have basar v'yayin, that's only true during the period of time, during the 9 days, when it's a minhag. On Erev Tisha B'Av, it's clearly not appropriate, and certainly, since Medina de Gemara besuda mafseket, it would be completely inappropriate. There it's Medina de Gemara. So where it's a minhag, there we have more room to use a sudat mitzvah in order to override it. Even in that instance, there are movements of severity within the isurim of Tisha B'Av. That means that Rosh Chodesh Av already starts one level of severity. Then Shavu Shechal Bo moves up another level. Then from Zayin Av, which we saw the psukim yesterday, in which the Nachrim entered the Mikdash, that ups it another level of severity. And then obviously Erev Tisha B'Av is the final or the highest severity besides Tisha B'Av itself. So in that case, as we move through each of those periods of time, we're less likely to give you dispensations to do things. So the idea of Sudan Mitzvah is much easier when you're talking about Rosh Chodesh Av. Again, Shavuot Shechal Bo, we would say less. We'd like to do it. After Zayin B'Av, we try to dissuade it the Gamre. So there are movements. We know that there is a certain amount of severity that increases with the time as we approach Tisha B'Av. The fact that got extended is all minhagim. It's introduced by the Rishonim. It's not clear how exactly they did it. We do have in other places, and we do have in our Gemara here, that Rabbi Meir mentions Rosh Chodesh. We do have Tanaim that mention those periods of time, The fact that the minhag extended is really from the minhag Ashkenaz, which is that the Yireim, people who were Yirei Hashem, wanted to experience the Churban HaBayit. They wanted to do it within a controlled environment, which was in a limited amount of time, but amount of time that they could handle. So therefore, B'basar V'yayin, they felt for the 9 days, that was something that people could handle. By cutting hair, they felt the 3 weeks was something that people could handle. And therefore, that's how the minhag developed, that people extended into those periods of time. In addition to that, I know Rav Soloveitchik talks about the idea of the paradigms of Avelut, and therefore he says the severity of Avelut reflects the different time periods, whether it's the Shana Rishona for a father and mother, whether it's Shloshim or it's Shiva or Yom Shemetu Bo Aviv Imo, those types of severity, we increase the severity of Avelut as we approach Tisha B'Av. So the Rishonim extended the restrictions outward to start to increase the severity or the level of Avelut starting from Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and approaching Tisha B'Av so that it was a gradual increase to Tisha B'Av. It's probably important because Tisha B'Av is what we call Avelut Yishana versus Avelut Chadasha, which is Chas V'Shalom, someone loses someone who's a Karov to them, then the raw emotions of losing the individual generate the Avelut and all the reactions and the minhagim Avelut are reflective of those emotions that one has. But when you have Avelut Yishana, Tisha B'Av, which is something that occurs every year, so there we have to engender the feeling of Avelut, and we have to get a person prepared to get there. It doesn't happen because the raw emotions aren't there. So the way they do that is by increasing the Nihuge Avelut as we approach Tisha B'Av, so a person feels more and more, and it generates that feeling until we finally get to Tisha B'Av, where a person can then have the emotional or proper emotional response to the loss or the Churban HaBayit. So that's, I think, how the Minagim developed in order to extend the Isurim beyond what's the Dina de Gemara. And again, as I said here, there are nafkaminot between whether it's a Minag or a Dina de Gemara. All right, now the Braita says, Tan Rabbanan, Kol mitzvot ha-no'ogot be'evel, no'ogot be'tet ba'av. That there is an equation between, or an equivalence between Avelut and Tisha B'Av, which means that Tisha B'Av has the same din as Avel. Now, the first thing they say is Asur Ba'achila V'shtia, which is obviously not true by Avelut. That is unique to Tisha B'Av. So that's Asur Ba'achila V'shtia. But now the other items, which is Berchitza, B'tzicha, Ubnilata, Sandal, B'tashmish, Amita, those Inuim are associated with Avelut, and just like an Avel is restricted in those items, so too are you restricted in those items on Tisha B'Av. Vasur likrot b'Torah. In addition to that, just like by an Avel cannot learn Torah, so too on Tisha B'Av we're restricted from learning Torah. B'Nevi'im Ktuvim, can't learn Torah. Nevi'im Ktuvim Tanakh. Lishnot Mishnah b'Talmud, Mishnah, Gemara, u'Midrash, u'Balachot u'Vagadot. So any part of Torah is restricted. Aval korehu b'Makom she'ein ragil likrot. So according to the Tana Kama, you're allowed to learn things that you haven't learned before, things that are difficult for you to understand. And same thing with Mishnayot. So you can read or learn things that you don't normally learn, as Rashi says, because it's a tsar for him. He doesn't understand it. It's difficult to get through. And because of that tsar, you're allowed to learn it because it doesn't bring you the joy of learning. But the things that you can do, or the Torah that you can engage in, are the kinot, Iyov, and Dvarim Arim Shebir Yirmiyahu, and the bad things, or the bad nevuot, in Yirmiyahu. Bitinoko Shabbat Rabban Bitelim. And the children do not learn Torah on this day. Now, that has to be for probably different reasons. Part of it is the idea of Simcha, but the truth is that Tinoko Shabbat Rabban don't really enjoy necessarily learning. Not everybody enjoys going to school. And therefore, the Bitelav, the Tinoko Shabbat Rabban, is more of a demonstration of the fact that there's an Isur of Limud Torah, and a demonstration of how Torah should be. It should be that we learn it b'simcha. So we take away the Torah, the Tinukot Shel Beit Rabban, as a symbol of the Avelut, or the symbol of the Tisha B'Av. Shmishum, why can't you learn Torah? Shenemar, Pigudei Hashem Yisharim Misam Chilev. The Pigudot, the commands of Hashem, the Torah of Hashem, are Yisharim, are straight, Misam Chilev. They gladden the heart. So since Limud HaTorah gladdens the heart, it would be antithetical to the feeling of Avelut or the feeling of Tisha B'Av, where we're supposed to be atzivim, where we're supposed to be upset. So therefore, learning Torah would be wholly inappropriate except for those things that don't bring simcha. So those are areas of Torah which are dark or deal with Avelut or kinot. And also, according to the Tanakhama, areas of Torah which you haven't learned before, which are difficult for you and don't bring you that type of simcha. So Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Tanakhama in its basic format. The only thing he disagrees with is you can't learn things that you haven't learned before. Because even though it might be difficult for you to engage in them and to learn them at first, but if you do succeed, it will bring you simcha. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda precludes you from learning anything that is not thematically appropriate for the day of Tisha B'Av. Now, there are many who have the practice to give shiurim on Tisha B'Av. And when they give shiurim on Tisha B'Av, they quote from all parts of Torah. And that is, as long as it's supportive and in the context of Tisha B'Av, and it's a shir about Tisha B'Av, then engaging that Torah, even though these are parts of Torah that would otherwise alone be restricted, but because it has to do thematically with Tisha B'Av, or the shir has to do with Tisha B'Av, they do permit Limud HaTorah for that reason. Okay, now, the Gemara says, Lo yuchal basar velo yishte yayin. Tana. Aval ochelhu basar maliach v'shote yain migito. First can eat salted meat. Well, basar maliach, it really doesn't mean salted meat. It means aged meat. V'shote yain migito, and it means wine that is in its vats still. It's in the press, meaning it's grape juice. So grape juice is not wine for these purposes. And meat that has been aged is not meat for these purposes. Basar maliach ad kamo. When is something considered to be basar maliach? Amar v'chinu bar kahana mishmei d'shmo kozman. As long as it's kishlamim, meaning 2 days and one night, which is the period of time that is a shlamim, then it's still designated or called basar. Because there the Torah tells us that if you have leftovers, me basar hashlamim, still calls it basar, then you have to burn it. So when is the basar shlamim? That's for 2 days and one night. So if it's within that period of time, it's still called basar. Meat that extends beyond that period of time is no longer called basar because it loses its flavor, it starts to decay, it is no longer good. We're talking obviously in a time when there's no refrigeration, and so therefore it's still called basar in the first 2 days of the basar, but after that point in time, it no longer has a status of basar because it's losing its taste, it's losing its form. Obviously with refrigeration today, that would change. V'shote yayin migito, v'yayin migito ad kamo. What does that mean, yayin migito? Kozman shu toses. As long as it's still bubbling. Now, it's bubbling from when they press the grapes. There's a certain amount of heat and the beginning of the fermentation process, which causes it to bubble in the beginning. While it's bubbling from that period of time, from that fermentation, it's hot. That is considered to be a yayin migito, or grape juice, and therefore it's not restricted as yayin. The yayin restriction only kicks in after that, because the isur of yayin, as we said before, is partly to do with simcha, but partly to do with something that's called yayin. Yayin that would be good enough to be for nisachim as well. There you'd probably need more time, but at least here it has to be something that has a shame yayin to it. And yayin only takes on that shame after the period of time in which the tzisa goes away. So yeah, the Gemara here brings also, in addition to that, the Tano, yayin toseis ein bo mishum gilui. Wine that is still bubbling in the beginning of that fermentation process doesn't have a din of gilui being left exposed, so we're worried about a snake depositing its venom in it. Bekama tisisato. How long does this bubbling last? Gimel yamim, for 3 days. So that gives you the definition of yayin and the definition of basar. Tosfot points out over here that with regards to these items. So even though when it comes to basar maluach, the Gemara over here says that it would be fine to eat. Nevertheless, the Tosafot over here says that for us, it's asur to eat basar maliach because we still eat it. I mean that we eat meat in that state as meat. And since we would consider meat in that state, it's still under the restriction. So Tosafot says, at least in his time, that basar that was aged longer than that, obviously not refrigerated, would still be problematic to eat because in their day, they eat that as basar. Tosafot says also, in addition to the fact that we still consider basar maluach to be basar, in addition to that, he says you should reduce the amount that you drink, meaning that he's not even talking about wine, he's talking about if you meet the mishaker, if you drink beer, or any other drink that you normally have, you should reduce the number of cups or amount that you drink during the meal. And number three, he says, is you should change your place. And these are all nihugim that apply to avelut as well, because the person has to, as he says, be mema'it bichvodo. He has to take down his stature or his normal practices in order to indicate that he's in pain over the Churban HaBayit. So all of these are items that relate to that. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Kach haya minagosh Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Ilai. This was the minag of Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Ilai. Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Ilai is stam Rabbi Yehuda in Shas. Erev Tisha B'Av mevin lo pat chareva b'melach. They used to bring them bread that was dried out, bread that was already stale, that was salted. V'yoshev ben atanur l'kirayim. He would sit between the oven and the stove. V'ochel v'shoteh ale kaiton shomayim. And then he eats there and drinks water over there. And his behavior was like as if he had someone who had just passed away. I mean, that he's noheg like an avel. But the emotional response of an avel who can't eat anything and won't eat anything because he's in such a state of emotional despondency. And so the same is true here by Tisha B'Av. So sitting between the tanur and kiraim, as Rashi says, it's makom nuval b'shebabayit. It's a place that is disgusting, a place that's dirty. So he put himself there because of, again, the feeling that you're reflecting the emotions that he had. He had only had pat chareva, the stale bread with melach and water, which are the basic items, but items that indicate a sense of avelut and a sense of not enjoying and not getting any benefit from the food, but simply eating to sustain oneself, which is a practice of someone who is be'avelut because they can't eat. They don't feel good. They don't want to feel good. They don't want to experience good things. And therefore, their practices are like this because to reflect their emotion, this is the way they would demonstrate their emotions. So here too, by Tisha B'Av, he had the same practices. And again, that leads to our practice by the Suda Mafseka to have, whether it's a little bread with ashes and a little salt or an egg, things that recognize the avilut that is associated with Tisha B'Av. We don't go as far as Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai and go to put ourselves in the dirtiest place in the house or something that's disgusting. We sit on the floor like avelim. I think that Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai was reflecting how he felt. He had such the deep emotions that were associated with the Churban. I think that generally our practice is just to sit on the floor and not to go to the extent that Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai did, which is to sit ben tanur l'kiraim in a place that's makom nuval shebabayit. I don't think that is the general practice of people. Okay, Tanan Hotam, we have a Mishnah in Makom Shenagu in Psachim. It says, Makom Shenagu lasot melacha b'tisha b'av osim. Makom Shenagu shelo lasot ein osim. Wherever there's a minag not to do melacha, one has to desist from doing melacha. In a place where they don't have that minag, then you don't have to desist from doing melacha. B'chol makom, tamidei chachamim b'teilim. In any place, the tamidei chachamim desist from doing melacha. If Shimon Gamliel omer, the olam yaseh adam, in this case, everybody can become like a Talmid Chacham. So we discussed this earlier in the Masechta as well, which is that with this situation, there's no kavod that comes with this. When you make yourself into a Talmid Chacham here, you're not taking any trappings of respect or privileges of a Talmid Chacham. Here, it's something that's quote-unquote to the negative. So therefore, everybody can be a Talmid Chacham here, and everybody should practice like a Talmid Chacham here, which is to be batel, and not to do malacha. Tani nami hochi, we have a braita that supports that. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer l'olam yaseh adam atzmo ketamid chacham, kedei sheitane. Person should make himself like a tamid chacham so that he should be afflicted, meaning that he desists from malacha, he desists from doing things because it's inappropriate to the day of Tisha B'Av. Tani idach, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer, kolo achel b'shoteh b'tisha b'av. Anybody who eats and drinks on Tisha B'Av, Rashi amends it to say, it doesn't literally mean Tisha B'Av, it means besudam afseket. Means an Erev Tisha B'Av. If so, therefore, Ochel v'shoteh b'Tisha B'Av, Kilo Ochel v'shoteh b'Yom HaKippurim. It's as if he ate and drank on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Kol Oseh Melacha b'Tisha B'Av, Eino Ro'eh Siman Bracha L'Olam. Anybody that does the work on Tisha B'Av does not see a Siman Bracha forever. Now, as Rashi and Tosafot both point out, it means not that he doesn't ever see a Siman Bracha, but from that work, he doesn't see a Siman Bracha. V'chomim Omerim, Kol Oseh Melacha b'Tisha B'Av, Eino Mitabel Al Yushalayim. If there's work on Tisha B'Av and it does not mourn for Yerushalayim, Eino Re'eh B'Simchata, is not, then Zocheh does not merit to see it in its rebuilding, in its joyous state. Shenemar, the Pasuk says in Yishayahu, Simchu et Yerushalayim v'gilu ba. You should be happy with Yerushalayim. You should rejoice with Kolo Aveha, those that love it. Sisu Ita Masos. You should be happy along and rejoice with it. Kol Hamitablim Aleha. All those who were mitabel, all those that mourned on Yerushalayim. Mikan Amru, from here they concluded, call him mitabel Yerushalayim. Anybody who's mitabel, who mourns on Yerushalayim, zocheh v'ro'eh b'simchata. He merits to see the happiness of the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. She'enu mitabel al Yerushalayim, someone who does not mourn in Yerushalayim, enu re'eh b'simchata. He does not have that zchut, that merit, to see in its happiness in its rebuilding. Tanya Nami Hochi, a bright that says that, kol ochel basar v'shutayayim b'tisha ba'av. Again, it's not on Tisha B'Av itself. Rashi says here, be'erev Tisha B'Av n'suda mafsaket, alav ha'ktuv omer, v'ti avonotam al atzmotam. That iniquity was on their, or in their bodies. I mean, this is something that is a grievous sin that a person will carry with themselves if they are not careful to be mitabel al Yerushalayim appropriately. So over here, there are a couple of items to address. In terms of malacha on Tisha B'Av, mi'ikar din, there's no restriction on malacha on Tisha B'Av. The problem of malacha on Tisha B'Av relates to the fact of hesach adat, which is that doing malacha on Tisha B'Av takes one away from the avelut of Tisha B'Av. And therefore, to do work is inappropriate because the work is going to take a person's mind away from what he's supposed to be focused on, which is that of the avelut. And so to desist from work, which is the practice today amongst Jews in the minhag olam, is to desist from work in general because of the fact that the day is built around a feeling. It's built around having a sense of avelut. And so working would be in a little bit antithetical to that feeling because you are distracting yourself. You're taking yourself away from the avelut. And the whole purpose of the day is to be sunken in the avelut. And that's why it would be inappropriate to work. That's why, even though generally there is no restriction against malacha, it's true of Tisha B'Av, it's also true of Purim, both of those days are days that involve very extreme emotions. Which is the extreme emotion of Tisha B'Av, it's on the negative side of Avelut, and on Purim, it's on the Simcha side, and Malacha would cause a person to be distracted or taken away from that primary purpose. And that's why, in general, we stop Malacha. It might be the same reason why there's an Isur Malacha on Yom Tov, because Malacha on Yom Tov would take you away from the primary purpose of Yom Tov. So here, in a way, we mimic that by saying that there should be no Malacha. Of course, if a person is going to suffer financial loss, and for whatever reason they need to do Malacha, it is permitted. But as the Gemara says here, inu re siman bracha. So again, to prevent financial loss, that's fine. But to see siman bracha from that work is, the Gemara says that you will not see that. So it's not kedai to invest in that work in order to have something that is beneficial or positive come about from it. And that's why the halacha, we generally encourage people not to work on these days unless it's absolutely necessary. That's number one. Number two is, kol amita bel yishraim zocheh v'roeh b'simchata, relates to the nature of avelut. Avelut is an emotional feeling, an emotion that extends from the loss of an individual, but it's also an emotion that slowly ebbs or wanes for an individual, and that's the natural course of humanity, which is that we forget things, that over time we tend to forget things or forget people, and the pain or the grief of losing someone over time is reduced because of the passage of time. So we know that if you have avelut, the avelut goes through periods of time of Shiva, Shloshim, and then the Shana for a parent. In each of those periods of time, the avelut is slowly reduced until a person completes the first year, and where they've some way separated themselves away from the avelut, and after that point of time, they move on. So the idea of the reduction of avelut is, number one, is it would be impossible for the world to exist if people were stuck in their avelut, in that emotional feeling of loss, then they wouldn't be able to move on, they wouldn't be able to progress and continue with their lives. So the bracha mi'at Hashem is that, exactly that the mate is nishtakach min alev, that the person who passed away is forgotten after a period of time. Now obviously, there's difference is in the type of loss and the nature of the loss, and it takes more time or less time, but there is this period of time, emotional experience, where a person, as they distance themselves from the event, they become less and less connected to it and have less of that strong emotion associated with the event. Now, over here, with Tisha B'Av, you're faced with a problem, which is that you have an event where it took place many years ago, and you're trying to engender emotion for something that took place a long time ago. And that's very hard. But the key difference is, and this we know from the Midrashim with regards to Yosef and Yaakov, when it says by Yaakov that Yaakov is mitabel on the loss of Yosef for many years. And Rashi over there says, why was Yaakov mitabel all those years? Because it's gzeira min hashamayim, that a mate nishtachach min alev, that someone who passes away is forgotten. That's only if they passed away. If they're still alive, that's not true. And the avelut stays strong during that period of time. So he says the reason that Yaakov was mitabel unbeknownst to him, was because Yosef was alive. Therefore, the feelings and the pangs of Avelut remained with him because the gzeira, or the nature of the world that made this nishkacha b'lev, did not apply to him. So the same is true here about Yerushalayim. Our belief that Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, and that Yerushalayim is still alive in that sense, should make it that the Avilut doesn't diminish, that the Avilut stays there and it can't be Nishtakach Ben Alev because Yerushalayim is really still alive. And I think that's the idea here of Komet Abel Yerushalayim Zocheh V'Roeh B'Simchata. Anybody who mourns on Yerushalayim will see B'Simchata. Because only someone who still believes Yerushalayim is alive can properly feel the Avilut. But there are also only ones who can feel B'Simchata will experience the Simcha because they really believe that Yerushalayim is alive and therefore they will rejoice in its rebuilding. If a person does not have that feeling towards Yerushalayim, then they, on both sides, they will not be able to be mitabel, but they also will not be b'simchata, because to them, Yerushalayim is dead, it's not alive still. And so that's the key element here, or the connection between the avilut and the simchata, is they're associated with the same effect, which is that Yerushalayim is still alive. And so that's got to be our focus in understanding, in our avilut on Tisha B'Av, is understanding that Yerushalayim is really still there, it's coming back, and therefore the raw emotion should still be there because we want it to come back and it hasn't died. So here we continue. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev b'kfiyat mita v'lo odu lo chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to flip over the beds and the chachamim don't agree. So Tanya, Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda, l'dvarecha ubrot uminikot matei aleim. Women who are pregnant and nursing, what can they do? So Amar lehem afani lo amarti el b'yachol. I only say what is possible. I mean that people who can flip over the beds and not sleep on a proper bed, then they have to. But ubrot uminikot are accepted from that because they can't do it. They need to have a mattress. They need a certain amount of comfort. So therefore, they are not included in this din. So Tanya Nami Hachiva, Breita that supports that understanding, Moder Rabbi Yehuda L'Chachamim B'Sheinu Yachol. Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Chachamim where it's impossible, where it's someone who cannot handle being on the floor, that you don't flip over the beds. Umodim Chachamim Rabbi Yehuda B'Yachol. And the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda where it's possible, where the person is able to do it, that they must do it. So the Gemara now says, Mai Binayu. There's no difference between them. If they agree that where it's possible you must do it, and where it's impossible you don't have to do it, then what's the difference between them? Igvenayu sharmitot. The difference between them is the other beds in the house. Meaning that, of course, the bed that one sleeps on, you have to flip over if they're able to do it. What about the beds that they don't sleep on? The other beds in the house, do you have to flip them over? Kedetanya. Shemrulik votata mita lo mitato bilvadu kofe. When you have to flip over the beds, this is moed katan, this is to do with avilut. You have to flip over the beds, it's not just his bed. You have to flip up over the, all the beds in the house. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda believes here in Tisha B'Av as well, you flip over all the beds, not just the one you sleep on. As the Chachamim say, it's only the one that you sleep on. Amarova, Hilchata, Ketana Didan. But it says, Aloha is like our Tana. Velo hodu lo Chachamim kolikar. Chachamim did not agree at all with this. Meaning that Aloha is Kedana Didan, that Lo Dolo Chachamim, meaning that the Chachamim don't agree at all, that you don't have any Kfiya Tamita on Tisha B'Av. Alright, so now Tosafot points out here that we don't have the practice to do Kfiya Tamita at all, even B'Avelut. We don't flip over the bed, so obviously it would not be applicable by Tisha B'Av, because we don't even do it by Avelut. Tosafot over here mentions the fact that we are Choshesh L'Kshafim. We'll do it more in detail when we get to it in Moed Katan, why we don't do Kfiyat, or why our practice is not to do Kfiyat Mita today, even though that's one of the Nihugei Avilut. Despite the fact, as Tosfot mentioned before, there is a requirement, or there is a minhag to do things that reduce a person's kavod and comfort on Tisha B'Av. A person should do things to reduce it. So if he normally sleeps on two pillows, he should sleep on one pillow. If he can, he could sleep on the floor instead of on his bed. All of these things where we do things that are of discomfort to show and to demonstrate our avilut and our pain over the Churban HaBayit, those are all considered to be proper minhagim. Again, they're not required, but a person should do things that show or demonstrate that difference that there is, the Churban HaBayit and Tisha B'Av are impacting them. All right, now we get to the final section of the Mishnah, which is Amar Shimon Gamliel, Lo ayu yamim tovim l'Yisrael kechamishazar ba'av ukuyom ha-kipurim. There were no better days for Klal Yisrael like the 15th of Av and Yom HaKippurim. So Gemara says, "Bishlomo Yom HaKippurim mishum deit beis licha u'michila." But that day we understand why it is because Bnei Yisrael were forgiven on that day. Yom shenitnu bo luchot achronot. Those are the day. That's the day in which Moshe descends from the mountain with the second luchot, and Bnei Yisrael are granted forgiveness for the Egel, and they're given the second luchot. So that we understand why that's a very auspicious day, because it's a day in which you have slicha u'michila. And that's why today we have Yom HaKippurim, and why it's considered to be a day of slicha michila is because of this that took place on that day originally, which is Moshe returns with the Luchot HaShniyot, and they're granted slicha michila, and that's a good reason to be happy. It's a good reason to assume that that is an auspicious day. Now, how do you get to that calculation? Rashi does the calculation over here. He says that Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the 7th of Sivan. He descends on the 17th of Tammuz, that we already did in the Gemara, because that's one of the things that happened on the Shivasar B'Tammuz, which is that Nishtabru Aluchot. And then there's a question about when he ascends the mountain again, when he came down from the 17th. Rashi over here discusses that he went up on the Yud Chet, he went up on the 18th of Tammuz, after he ground up the Egel and punished the Poshim, he goes back up to Shemaim on the 18th of Tammuz, and then 80 days later is Yom HaKippurim. Because the calculation is, you have 12 days left in Tammuz, which is a Chaser month. Then you have 30 days of Av, which is Malay. 29 days of Elul, which is Chaser. And then 9 days of Tishrei, that gets you to 40 days. Plus, since on the 18th he only went up in the morning, he has to wait till on the 10th in the morning to make it a complete 40 days. And that's how Moshe came down on Yom HaKippurim 80 days later, and that's learned out of the Psukim and Devarim, that he went up for 40 days when he had a difficult time, and he was praying for Bnei Yisrael, and then the latter 40 days where he receives the Torah the second time, which was a time of Slicha Mechila, when he finally descends on Yom HaKippurim. Now, in isolation, or in a vacuum, the Rashi makes a lot of sense, and it's very easy to understand what Rashi did. The calculations are fine. The problem comes up with the fact that we have a practice that we say from Rosh Chodesh Elul until the 10th of Tishrei are considered to be the quote-unquote 40 days of the second Luchot, as well as those are days of Yemei Slicha. And therefore, the Sfaradim get up every morning and they say Slichot during the month of Elul, we blow the shofar, we do other things that Elul has that consideration because they're part of the last 40 days. The way it turns out, in Rashi's calculation, that's not the case. The last 40 days start on the 28th of Av and not in Rosh Chodesh Elul. Rashi does not address it at all. Tosafot in other places in Shas actually discusses the issue. Tosafot in Shabbat on Daf Pei Tet, as well as Tosafot in Bava Kamma on Daf Pei Bet. In both those locations, Tosafot discusses how you calculate the 40 days. And he's trying to accomplish two things. One is the idea that it's the Rosh Chodesh Elul is a significant day. Number two is that Moshe descends on Yud Tishrei on Yom Kippur, as well as the fact that the reason that we read the Torah on Monday and Thursday, according to Tosafot, is because Moshe went up on a Thursday and came down on a Monday, meaning that those were days that were auspicious because of the 40 days, and they happened to deal with the Thursday and a Monday. So that's why we say long Tachanun on those days. That's why those are days that we fast on for Bahab, because those are significant days in terms of Matan Torah as well. In order to do that, Tosafot runs into a lot of problems, and he says the calculation is very difficult to get all of these things to align. And therefore, Tosafot makes a suggestion that maybe Elul was Malay in that year, that Abru al Elul, that they made Elul 30 days in that year, because he's trying to deal with this issue of trying to make everything work out and get the 40 days and land on Yud Tishrei. In addition to the fact that the Tanchuma, Midrash Tanchuma, says that Moshe went up on the 19th of Tammuz and not the 18th. So that definitely creates a problem, and therefore you would have to have Elul be Malay in order to get it that he came down on Yom HaKippurim. If you want to see them, there's a Tosafot in Bava Kamma, Daf Pei Bet Amud Aleph, and Tosafot in Masechet Shabbat and Pei Tet Amud Aleph, as well as in Bava Batra, there's a Rashbam there on Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. You can look at all of them, and they try to do these calculations. And doing these calculations, it's very hard to get all of these items to match up. The Monday, Thursday, Rosh Chodesh Elul, Yud Tishrei, as well as the day that Moshe sends the Har in Tammuz. Rashi, again, does a simple calculation here, but doesn't work out perfectly with all the other ideas, and that's what Tosafot's trying to reconcile over there. Now, the Gemara wants to know, Eletet Tu B'Av Mahi. What is significant about Tu B'Av? And now we're going to have a list of items that the Moraim give as to what was significant about the day of Tu B'Av. Amar Yehuda Mashmol, Yom Shehutrahu Shvatim Avo Zeh B'Zeh. Again, the Rishbam mentions it in Bava Batra, that there's no fact that it was on Tu B'Av. That's a Mesorah that we have that was on Tu B'Av. It was the day in which the Shvatim were allowed to intermarry between them. My Darush, what was the Drasha? Zed Davar She'etziva Hashem Livnot Tzlavchad. When Bnot Tzlavchad inherit their father's property and they are women, the Shevet Yosef comes and complains about the fact that their Nachala is going to get changed over to another Shevet if they marry people from outside of their Shevet. So Moshe says that Hashem tells them that they must marry people from their Shevet. They end up marrying their cousins. But that din only applies because zeh davar, zeh is a miut. So davar zeh lo yeh noheg elo bedor zeh. That was only true in that generation. In the subsequent generation, then the shvatim were allowed to intermarry, and it wasn't a problem anymore, especially for women who inherited land from their father. And that happened, the Gemara says, on Tu B'Av, and therefore it was a happy day, or auspicious day, because the Shvatim were allowed to marry between themselves. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Nachman, Yom Shutar Shevet Binyamin Lavob Gal. It has to do with Pilegesh B'Givah, the story of Pilegesh B'Givah, where Bnei Yisrael came out to wipe out the entire Shevet of Binyamin. Now they have a problem, because part of the Shua that they took when they went to battle against Binyamin was that nobody would give their children or their daughters to the people of Binyamin. So now we have a problem because we have these men left over from Binyamin and they have no one to marry because they're not allowed to marry anybody from Bnei Yisrael. They actually gave them some of the women of Yavesh Gilad, where they wiped out the city there, gave them some of the women, but didn't suffice. So therefore they gave or came up with a way to be matir the Shevet Binyamin to marry others, which is Shenemar, Bish Yisrael Nishba Mitzpah Lemor, Ish Memenu Loiten Bito to Binyamin Lisha. No man would give his daughter to Shevet Binyamin for a wife. My Darush, what are they doing? What are they duration there? Amarav Mimenu Velo Mibanenu. We will not give our children or daughters over, but our sons will not be bound by that Shvua. So again, that was the way that they were matired, was that the Shvua only applied to that generation, to those people, but by the next generation, that was not the case, and therefore there was a heter for Binyamin to then to remarry or marry within the other Shvatim at that point in time, and that's what the celebration was on Tu B'Av, as well as the fact that the Gemara describes in other places that by Shevet Binyamin, they told them to come and to watch the women dancing in the vineyards and they should grab their wives because they weren't allowed to give their daughters as wives. But if Bnei Binyamin took them, then it wasn't a problem with the restriction. And so that's how in the Shoftim, they dealt with the issue of the Bnei Binyamin, at least in the first generation. But in the second generation, where it was Mutar, that happened on Tu B'Av. Amar Rabbi Bar Chanan, Rabbi Yochanan, and some have a girsa of Rav Dimi Bar Yosef, Amar Rav Nachman, Yom Shekalu Bo Meitei Midbar, the day on which the Meitei Midbar, the people in the Midbar, stopped dying. So this Rashi over here brings a Midrash that says that every Tisha B'Av, throughout the time that they were in the Midbar, every Tisha B'Av they used to go and dig their graves, and they used to lie down in their graves on the night of Tisha B'Av, and then in the morning, they used to say, Yibadlu Achayim Mitoch HaMeitim. And everybody who had turned 60 passed away and stayed in the graves, and then everybody else got up from the graves and went away. And they did this every year. In the final year, in the 40th year in the Midbar, they did this. And they got up in the morning and nobody died. So they thought that they had the wrong day, because nobody died that time. So they waited, they did it night after night, until they reached Tu B'Av when the moon was full. Once the moon was full, they knew that they for sure had the right date, and people weren't dying, and that was the celebration that people had stopped dying, meaning that the Meitei HaMidbar, or the people that died in the Midbar, were done or finished, no longer. There was no longer anybody dying. Question of why that was a celebration is interesting, because in that case, the way that Rashi brings the Midrash, nobody had died since the previous Tisha B'Av. So Tosafot over here brings alternatives to the Midrash, even though they don't agree with the Yerushalmi that Rashi is quoting over here. Nevertheless, the Rashbam says, Komem Shanim lo ayu meitim ela b'tibav. They only died in Tisha B'Av. V'chol tibav ayu meitim. 21,000 plus a little more in order to eliminate all those people within the age of 20 and 60. And those extras add up to 15,000. So Tosafot brings another answer, which is that Tosafot brings one answer here, and Bava Batra expands on these two answers that he brings over here, which is one answer is that people died all year long. Just the majority of them died on Tisha B'Av. So therefore, in the 40th year, people were still dying all year long. Just on Tisha B'Av, it stopped that year. And then they waited and they saw for the additional time period until they reached Tu B'Av, when they knew that for sure they weren't dying anymore. And that's why they celebrated, because that was the end of the dying. That's one way to explain it. Or the other way to explain it is that generally they died on Tisha B'Av, and they even died on Tisha B'Av of that last year. Or a third way to explain it is that they were supposed to die on that last final Tisha B'Av, but Hashem granted a waiver to those individuals on their last year that they didn't die on Tisha B'Av. So even though they were supposed to die, they didn't die. Now, all of that's interesting because Tosafot premises it on the 40 years in the Midbar. The problem is that the Chet HaMerglim, as we know, takes place in the second year while they're in the Midbar. So they're only really 38 years, not 40 years. So it makes it a little difficult in all these calculations that Tosafot does. But those that say that they died on that final Tisha B'Av, the reason they waited until Tu B'Av was because that was the Avilut. If someone had a relative that passed away on Tisha B'Av in that final year, then the 7 days of Avilut would terminate of Mikzat Yom Kikulu on Tu B'Av. And that's why the celebration was on Tu B'Av, according to those that say that they still died on that final Tisha B'Av. So there are different ways of laying out what happened here. But for whatever reason, that was the termination of the Gzeirah of those of Meitei Amidbar. And that they know, either know for sure, that terminated on Tu B'Av, and that's why it was a day of celebration. Shneamar says, "Vehi kasher tamu kanshei milchama lamut v'yedaber Hashem elai." So Gemara determines from here that when it says that after all those people that were supposed to die, 20 to 60 in the Midbar, then Hashem speaks to Moshe. Elai haya dibur. At that point, Hashem spoke to me, which is Damamar Achelu Chalu Meitei Midbar. From the time period that the people had not died from the, who were supposed to die in the Midbar, Lo Yadibur Moshe. Hashem did not speak to Moshe. Now that doesn't mean he didn't speak to him at all. It means that he never spoke to him either Pe'al Peh, or he didn't speak to him in a gentle manner. And that Moshe only gets the speech or the talking from Hashem or the instructions from Hashem, Bizchut Klal Yisrael. So the fact that Klal Yisrael was in a position of Nidui also put Moshe in that same position, and therefore Moshe does not have a Dibur. And if you actually look in the Torah, those years are missing from the Torah. If you look in Sefer Bamidbar, from the time of Miraglim, except for the Adat Korach, which is Machloket Rishonim when it took place, there is no stories between the time of Meitei of the Miraglim until the 40th year. So I mean, those 38 years are actually missing from the Torah, and it's actually possible that Hashem didn't speak to Moshe at all during those 38 years, and that's because we have no Diburim during that period of time between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So but the Gemara here correlates between these two items, which is that once the Meitei Amidbar stopped, then Moshe was Zochet to get the Hashrat HaShchinah. So when Hashem was angry at Bnei Israel, he didn't get it. When they were forgiven, and when that was they were freed of that decree, then Moshe gets the direct message from Hashem, and that's what it says here. Vedaber Hashem Eli, Eli had dibur. That was when Kasher Tamu Kanshei Amilchama Lamut, once all the people had died that were in the Midbar. The one explanation that the Avelut terminated on Tu B'Av, that's the only one that gets you really to Tu B'Av. Otherwise, it should have been earlier. I would suggest that, in general, 15th, or the middle of the month, is a turning point in the month. And so, if we say that the beginning of the month is inauspicious, then we'd say that the latter half of the month becomes the time that's auspicious. So even though maybe the Gezerah terminated on Tet B'Av, nevertheless, that they only celebrated, only made a day of celebration at that turning point of the month, which is Tu B'Av, which is for the latter half of the month. And that might be why Tu B'Av becomes that pivotal day, because literally it's the middle of the month, and that changes, or that's the bridge or the fence between the inauspicious half of the month and the more auspicious part of the month. Now, the Gemara continues with other reasons. Ula Amar, Yom Shebitel Hoshea ben Ala Pruzda'ot Shoshiv Yeravam ben Avat. Shebitel ben Ala eliminated the guards on the paths or the roads to Yerushalayim that Yeravam ben Avat had stopped the people from being Ola the Regel. He took them away. So though Shashiv Ramin Abad on Drachim Shalo Yalu Yisrael Regel, he eliminated them. Vamar Le'ezer Sheyirtze Yalu. And he says, wherever you want to go, you can go. Meaning that he didn't say they should go up to Yerushalayim, he just didn't stop them from going up to Yerushalayim. Now, Hoshea ben Ela is no tzaddik. He was definitely a Rasha. And it says there in the Psukim, in Malachim Bet, Vayasara ben Hashem, Rak Lo Kemalche Yisrael. He did bad in the ways of Hashem, in the eyes of Hashem. He just wasn't as bad as those that preceded him. So that's what the Gemara Dashan's over here. What is it that he did that he wasn't as bad as them? Is he eliminated the guards, and he didn't stop the people from being Ole the Regel. Now, Hoshea ben Ela is at the end of Malchut Yisrael, so he doesn't really have a lot of choice, because basically Malchut Yisrael is being dismantled at that point in time, and Malchut Yehuda is going to be the only surviving Malchut from that point forward. All right, Rav Matna Amar, Yom Shnitnu Arugei Beitar Gvura. It was the day on which the Meitei Beitar in the Bar Kokhba revolt were allowed to be buried. The bracha of Tov Meitiv was nitkana and added on to benching on that day where they allowed the people of Beitar to be buried. Atov shlo yisrichu. The Tov was that even though the bodies were laying out there in the hot sun, they did not rot, they did not decompose. The Meitiv was shnitnu l'kvura. So that's the idea of Tov Meitiv, was to giving thanks to Hashem that in the end they were brought to proper burial. But proper burial, well, they were still intact, and they had not decomposed. Why that's added into benching, Tosafot over here has an interesting statement, difficult statement, but he says, Mipnei shardavi shehayu kamo geder bekerem velo nisrichu. Says they were like a fence around the kerem, and they did not rot. I mean, that's how high the bodies were piled up, And despite the fact, they did not rot. So there's an association with Kerem and Yayin. And since we bench ala kos, that's where they put the bracha of Tov Meitiv together with the kos of benching. But the day of Yom Shnei Nidu Harugei Beitalik Vura was, again, a difficult situation, which was the Mered Bar Kokhva was ended with the destruction of Beitar. But here there's a glimpse of good that comes out, a glimpse of positive comes out. And if you truthfully look at all the items that are mentioned here, they're all associated with something negative and then a positive that comes out of that. So all these items in the first place were something bad or negative. And then on Tu B'Av, there's a transition into something that good that came out of it. Of course, some of the good is just because it was bad before and now it's good. But you see in there that transition, or what I would call it, the ray of hope. Even in the depths of destruction, the depths of Avilut, there's still hope and there's still this ray of hope. And in each of these items, there was something good. And in this case, the Haruge Beitar Nitan Likvura. Technically, 7 days. Because Beitar is conquered on Tisha B'Av, right? That was one of the five things that happened on Tisha B'Av. And they were Nitan Likvura on the 15th. You're talking about the summertime. You're talking about the middle of the summer with the blood flowing up to the knees. I mean, that they said there were rivers of blood flowing out of the city, and the fact that they didn't rot, that's pretty significant. Rabba v'Rav Yosef Tamrei Tavayu, Yom Shepaskul M'nichrot Etzim L'Maracha. It's the day on which they stopped cutting the wood for the Mizbeach. Right, Tanya, we have a Breita. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer, Michamisha Asar Ba'av Ve'elech Tashash Kocha Shel Chama. From the 15th Av onward, the sun is not strong anymore. V'leyu Kortim Etzim L'Maracha. And they do not then cut wood for the Maracha, L'fi She'enam Yevishim. Because they're not dry enough. So either they're not dry enough, meaning that they don't burn well, or Tosfot says they're not dry enough so they don't get wormy. And if you have wormy wood, then it's pasul de mizbeach. So they stop taking wood from that point in time because the sun doesn't have the power to dry the wood out anymore from that point forward, and therefore it's not wood that's appropriate for the mizbeach. What this has to do with celebrating on Tu B'Av probably has to do with the next statement, which is Amar Menashe, V'kari le yom tavar magal. It's the day on which they break the axe. It's the day where they stop cutting. So it's the day of breaking the axe. Mikam Elech, the Mosif Yosif, the one who adds on will have be added on to. The Dolom Yosif will go with Tosafot's gear. So over here, Yasif. The one who does not add on, Yasif, will be Yasif. My Yasif. What does it mean that he's Yasif? I'm Rav Yosef Tikbere Yimei. His mother will bury him, meaning that he will die early. So now what is meant by this, as Rashi explains over here, from the point of the 15th and Av onwards, the nights start to become longer than the days. In addition to that, we stop cutting the wood. So therefore, a person now has more free time. With that more free time, because they're not cutting wood, in addition to that, the nights are getting longer where they didn't work, then a person has to start learning Torah at nights. Starts to add on to their learning of Torah at nights. And that's what it says here. The Mosif Yosif, the one who adds on to learn Torah at night, Yosif will live a longer life. La Mosif, the one who is Batel Mina Torah, even though he has more time on his hands now, Yosif, his life will be cut short. So the celebration here at Tu B'Av is exactly that pivotal point in which we switch over from the days of work to the days of learning. And that's why it's a day of celebration, not because it's the day where you stop cutting wood for the Mizbeach, but that also is a day of transition. When they stop cutting wood for the Mizbeach, it's a transition where they start to learn more Torah, and they also had more time at night to learn Torah. All right, so now the Gemara says, Sheben Benot Yushalayim. The end of the Mishnah says, on those days, Benot Yerushalayim should go out and dance. Tan Rabbanan, Bat Melech, the princess, who doesn't need to borrow clothing, nevertheless, Shoelet mi Bat Kohen Gadol. She borrows clothing from the daughter of the Kohen Gadol. So even though she didn't need it, she borrows it. But because of her stature, she still borrows it from someone who is, like, next in command. So you have the king, and then the next is Kohen Gadol. Bat Kohen Gadol, the daughter of the Kohen Gadol, mi Bat Skan. She borrows it from the Skan Kohen Gadol. The daughter of the Skan Gadol, Bat Skan, and the daughter of the Skan Gadol, Bat Meshuach Milchama. She takes it from the daughter of Meshuach Milchama, the Kohen who goes out to battle and speaks to the troops on the way out to battle. Bat Meshuach Milchama, Bat Kohen Ejot. She takes it from the daughter of a regular Kohen. Of Chol Yisrael, Sholim Zemizeh. And each person borrowed. So no matter what their stature was, they all borrowed the clothing. Kadesh, Lo Yitbayesh, and Misha Enlo. In order that nobody be embarrassed because they don't have, because everybody borrowed, therefore there was no differentiation. Because everybody had clothing and everybody had nice clothing to wear. Kol ha-kelim tu'unim tvila. All of these bigadim required tvila. Amar Rabbi Lazar, afilu mekupalim unochim bekupsa. Even if they weren't worn, they were folded up and put away in a drawer in a closet. You still have to put them into the mikveh. And again, Rashi explains over here, because shalol levayesh. It's because somebody, not everybody was tahor. And therefore they put them all in the mikveh to make sure all of them were tahor and not to embarrass anybody. So it doesn't matter whether it was worn or not worn. Every piece of clothing went into the mikveh in order not to differentiate. Benot Yisrael, Yotzot, V'cholot, Bikramim. Bnei Yisrael go out and they dance in the vineyards. So now we have a bright Tana, Mishen Loisha, Nifne Lisham. Someone who didn't have a wife would go there to pick out his wife because you have the women dancing there and then you get the choice of the choicest women that were there. Miyuchasot Shebehen Ayumrim Bachur. That was what our Mishnah says. Now we have a bright that expands on what the Mishnah says. Tana Banan. Yififiyot Shebehen. The beautiful ones among them. Mayom wrote, what did they say? Tnu Enechem the Yofi. Look at the beauty. Sheni Shah the Yofi. A woman's only there for her beauty. Miyuchasot Shebehen. Those that came from good families. Mayom wrote, what would they say? Tnu Enechem the Mishpacha. Look at the family. Shilifei Shena Isha the Banim. A woman's only for the children. If you're from a family of Miyuchasim, that will also make your children more wanted by others, whether they're boys or girls, other people want to marry them. Michurot Shebehen. Those that were Michurot, I guess Michurot means they were both not pretty, and they were not Miyuchasot. Mayom wrote, what did they say? K'chu Michem L'shem Shamayim. Take your wife L'shem Shamayim. Uvad Shiteachrunu B'zuvim. As long as you adorn us with jewelry. So meaning that you just need to take care of us. As Rashi says, Milta Ba'al Mahud Amri. Just something that they said. Just give us nice clothing, take care of us, and we'll be good wives. So again, the idea being that every person has something to offer, has something to focus on, and therefore they're trying to attract the attention of the men that are there with what that which they have to offer. Amar Ula Bira, Amar Abilazar. Altira Kodesh Bochu Lasot Machol de Tzadikim. In the future, a Kodesh Bochu will make a circle for the Tzadikim. Behu Yoshev Benehem Began Eden. And he sits amongst them in Gan Eden. And every one of them can point with their finger at a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Shinamar. So the pasuk says, Vayamar Bayomahu. They will say on that day, Hinei Elokeinu, Zekivinu Lo. There is our God that we have waited for, Vyoshieno, and that he will save us. Ze Hashem Kivinu Lo. This is the God that we waited for, Nagila Venismecha Bishuato. Let us be glad and celebrate and exult in his salvation. The Gemara here is darshaning the word zeh. The word zeh, the Gemara always thinks in the Torah, means that you can point and see it directly. Therefore, when the Torah says, Achodesh hazeh lechem, the Gemara says about that, that Moshe and Aaron had difficulty with the Levana b'chidusha, and therefore Hashem took out Levana b'chidusha and pointed to it, and showed them it. Also by Kriyat Yamsuf, it says, zeh keli van vehu. So the Midrash says over there that afilu shifcha shal hayam, even the maidservants on the yam was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it says zeh keli van vehu, they're able to point to Hashem. So here the Gemara also uses the word zeh, and therefore the word zeh they see as being pointing, the ability to point to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now I'll just point out something here. I think this why this is the conclusion of Masechet Tanit, we'll see in 1 second, but it has to do with the aspect of Achdut, which is what is described here as a machol tzedekim. Machol is a circle. A circle has three properties to it. A circle has a property which is, number one, it delineates that which is inside the circle and that which is outside the circle. Number two property of the circle is that every point along the circle is equidistant from the middle. Number three property of the circle is that every point on the circle has another point that's directly opposite on the circle. And I think that is very important here based on what the Pasuk and what the Gemara is saying here about the Midrash. What the Pasuk is saying is, the Gemara is saying over here is that a circle represents that there are many different ways to approach Avodat Hashem. Now, a circle delineates what's on the inside and what's on the outside. Not everything is proper Avodat Hashem, and not everything can be considered the proper Derech. But there is a circle, there is a delineation. But anybody who is within that delineation is considered to be an Avodat Hashem, even though they're different from each other. So there is a point at which you're considered to be an Ovid Hashem, a point where you're not considered to be an Ovid Hashem. But once you cross over that line, there are many different ways to approach Hashem. And that's what it means here, that there are a circle, and they can point to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They can point to a Kodesh Baruch Hu because every point along the circle is equidistant from the middle. So that means that even though there are many different ways to be Ovid Hashem, and many different approaches to Hashem, they're all equal and equally proper in Avodat Hashem, because every point along the circle is exactly equidistant from that middle point. And so that makes them all valid ways of being Avodat Hashem. What's also important here is that everybody on the circle has a point exactly opposite them in the circle. And over here in the Pasuk, it actually says the word Zeh twice. So when it says the word Zeh twice, the first time that they point in Zed, they point to a Kaddish Baruch Hu in the middle. And that's the idea that Hashem, that everybody who's an Oved Hashem is equidistant and is valid in their Avodat Hashem. But then it says Zeh again in the Pasuk. And the Zeh again is because when you point to Hashem, you also are pointing at the point that is exactly opposite you on the circle. And that means that you're validating the people that are just exactly opposite you and exactly different from you. And that's what it means, that every tzaddik will stand around and they'll point to Hashem and say, that's Hashem, that's the Shekhinah. But they'll also point to the point in the circle that is exactly opposite them and say they are valid as well. They are also Ovdei Hashem. And that's the important aspect here of the circle, which is the validation of the different approaches, but more importantly, the validation of the people that are exactly opposite you and exactly different from you, that they also have a valid approach to Avodat Hashem, and that there's an importance here and a premium put on Achdut, on the unity of Klal Yisrael. And that many of the things that we mentioned here with regards to Tu B'Av and the ideas that are associated with the unity of Klal Yisrael, those are the days or the happy days of Klal Yisrael. La'atid lavo, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, when they stand around Machol L'Tzadikim, that's a day of happiness because that's a day of Achdut, as we just described here. So too, with regards to Tu B'Av and with regards to Yom HaKippurim, they are days of Achdut. If you look in the Chazarat Shatz in Musaf on Yom HaKippurim, there in the Chazarat Shatz, when it's describing the nature of the day of Yom HaKippurim, it says, Yom Shel Slicha Mechila Yom Kapara, and it says there, Yom, also that is a day of Ava Vireut. It's a day of love and unity amongst Klal Yisrael. Alright, it's a different shir why that's important, why Yom HaKippurim is a day of Ava Vireut, but it's clear that it's defined as a day of Achdut and unity amongst Klal Yisrael, the day of Yom HaKippurim. And same with Tu B'Av. Some of the reasons here we saw with regards to Tu B'Av are also about this idea of unity of Klal Yisrael, especially the ideas by Pilegesh B'Giva and the fact that the Shvatim could marry into each other. So we see that these days are important, or these days are days of Simcha because of this idea of Achdut and the unity of Klal Yisrael. And that's what's going to be L'atid Lavo, that the Tzadikim are going to stand around the Machol and celebrate with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the aspect of unity amongst Klal Yisrael, and that's our power. And again, that should be our zchut, that in these difficult times, that we should all unify, have the achdut that was shown over the last period of time in Eretz Yisrael should continue, and should bring us the zchut to merit in the Binyan Beit HaMikdash b'mehir b'yameinu, and to be zoche, to see and point to the Shekhinah ourselves. And with that, we conclude, Masechet Tanit, Aron Alach, V'shloshu Prakim, Uslikala, Masechet Tanit.